We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Paul Barkish.
I like this kind of party.
The Score senior football expert.
Once you put all the evidence that we have together, that's the bottom line.
Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, and Westwood One.
It goes deep. Hub does too.
Analyzing the Bears and the NFL.
This was an ongoing conversation at Hallis Hall for literally a couple months.
Paul Barkish with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
On Wednesdays, Hub belongs to us, and we have him right here. He is at Hub_Arkish on Twitter. He is ready to talk football here at the top of the hour that is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Cats host Nebraska this Saturday at 11 a.m. Limited tickets remain. Buy now at nusports.com. And Hub is brought to you by UV Vodka. Play your 2018 Turkey Bowl on Soldier Field. Visit 670thescore.com's contest page for more details. Hub, hello.
How you doing?
Well, we're good. Any truth to anything about the possibility that Jordan Howard could be flipped to the Eagles?
I don't think so. I actually am pretty friendly with John Clayton and have been talking recently, and I'm not sure where that came from. I think that was more a question of putting one and one together and trying to get two. There were some rumblings last year prior to the draft that not everybody at Hallis Hall was sold on Jordan Howard as a franchise back, but was never able to confirm any of that. And when you've got a guy who's accomplished what he has in the first couple of years, and you know he can get it done, is he a perfect fit for what Matt Nagy wants to do? Does he resemble a Kareem Hunt or a Jamal Charles or those types of backs? No. But he certainly can be a huge contributor in the offense. And so I think what's happened early on is, and nobody's really focused on it, is that the offensive line just isn't blocking it very well as far as the straight-ahead runs between the tackles. He's getting hit in the backfield too often. They haven't made that a part of the offense or the scheme quite yet. But I expect in the next week or two or three you're going to see him have a big game and all this talk is going to go away. You cannot plan on Tariq Cohen getting 22, 24 touches a game. You look at him and you know he's not likely to be able to stand up to that kind of pounding, and you don't have anybody else right now. So, you know, when you think you're a contender, why you would deal Jordan Howard just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Hub, I mean, just as a philosophical, you know, exercise here, the idea from Clayton, you know, putting one together like that makes sense, but Pace has pushed all in. You know, he's traded for Khalil Mack, he's given up draft capital. He wants players, and the very reason that the Eagles would want Howard, injuries to other running backs, is probably a reason he's not moving him to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have anybody to replace him. If you had somebody that he was keeping on the bench, that would be different. But him and Tariq Cohen are very different running backs. Benny Cunningham is strictly a third down special teams, you know, number three type guy. The kids on the practice squad, Maisel and Nall, there's a reason they're on the practice squad. So, to do this now just wouldn't make any sense. The deadline is October 30th, so we're about 20 days away. Now, is there a possibility that they could make a change in the position during next off season, maybe prior to the draft? Yeah, certainly. I mean, we've learned, you don't have to get running backs in the first round. But the idea that something could be imminent or could happen in the next few weeks or prior to the deadline just on too many levels doesn't make a lot of sense.
We spent time yesterday talking about the nature and notion of a trap game, that it's one thing for gamblers to look at a certain line or, you know, look at a home dog and look at a team that's got a more important game the next week. But I do think that fans tend to project their own feelings on the players themselves and look at this as the idea of some kind of letdown coming off the big win and then looking at somebody beatable, knowing the Patriots are coming. There isn't any doubt in my mind about the Bears under this young coaching staff coming off the bye being as focused as possible on the Miami Dolphins and only the Miami Dolphins. Is there any doubt in your mind?
No, none whatsoever. And you just touched on the reasons. I mean, this is not a team that has accomplished anything yet. You know, what exactly laurels would they be resting on? What would make them think that they can, you know, take a trip down to Florida and just show up and win the football game? I mean, you know, I talked about this last week. I think it's great that they're 3-1, and everybody says they could be 4-0, but they could just as easily be 1-3. And I think they know that. And I think Matt Nagy is very much focused on that. Now, as we get later into the season, let's say that you get a big win over the Patriots or you have a signature game like that, and then you see another soft spot on the schedule, maybe the Jets, we'll see, you know. But right now, no, I don't see any logic that would suggest that they should get caught in a trap this Sunday.
You know, I'm looking at that game, the Dolphins game as it is, and I understand that Mitch Trubisky could very well have a game that goes the other way, the 6 interceptions maybe. I understand that. You know, that Dolphins team is one that's it's a better defense than you played. I just can't see that offense that Miami's going to run out there against the Bears defense doing much of anything. This is the game that they put this thing together for.
Yeah, I mean, this is an offensive line in Miami that wasn't special before they started having problems. Then you take Josh Sitton, put him on IR. You take the center, you put him on IR. Laremy Tunsil's in the concussion protocol. We don't know if he's going to play at left tackle. The Bears' front seven is not a group you want to face with 40 or 60% of your offensive line missing, particularly when that line wasn't that great to begin with. Beyond that, Devontae Parker can't stay on the football field, supposed to be their number one receiver. They've got a two-headed running back and Frank Gore and Kenyon Drake, because neither one is really a starter at this point in their careers. And Ryan Tannehill is nothing special. So, you know, unless the Bears, you know, you could get a weather situation like Miami had with Tennessee, you know, in that opener, and that's what happened in that football game. Now, the hurricane is already north of there and going through today, so there's nothing on the forecast for that. But short of something like that, the Bears offense could struggle because the Bucs defense is the worst in the league. Miami's hasn't been very good statistically, but they do some things well. Cameron Wake and Robert Quinn can rush the passer off the edges. They're not real stout up the middle. That's why I've got a feeling this could be a Jordan Howard game. They could very well loosen up that pass defense by banging away up the middle with Howard. We'll just have to see what Matt Nagy decides to do. But when you do the analysis, even though you got a 3-2 team and a 3-1 team, they're very different teams in how they've gotten here, and there's just nothing to suggest that Miami should be a big problem for them. I'm not saying it'll be easy. The Bears aren't that good yet. But there's a reason the Bears will be a road favorite here.
I was actually surprised to see that Anthony Miller was going to try to play wide receiver with some kind of shoulder harness to hold his unstable shoulder in the joint. I understand if you're a right guard, you can do that. How can a wide receiver who theoretically would need full extension of his arms be able to play compromise like that?
You know, it's not new, Dan. I haven't seen it yet, but I think it's kind of a combination hard and soft brace, which does allow for pretty good flexibility, but pads up and protects the joint. I know of receivers who've done it before. It's certainly not ideal, and especially with a rookie like this who is just learning. I personally would rather just, you know, take the time and get him healthy. But obviously they're convinced if they're going to do this that it's the type of the injury that isn't likely to get worse with additional contact. I'm not sure how that would be. You know, one thing that the Bears are interesting about, it's almost like they're going NHL on us. To this day, we don't know what the injury to Adam Shaheen is. There's still some questions as to whether it's an ankle or a foot. I don't think anybody has established whether Miller has a separated shoulder or a dislocated shoulder. Those are two very different things. I heard both reports. He doesn't have a broken collarbone. We know that. And so, obviously, it's the type of injury that they're comfortable he's not going to do any more damage to, and they think they can protect them with this brace. But I know other receivers have done it, and the brace has the kind of flexibility that you can get your arms up. You're not likely to do, you know, full extent leaping on one of the high point throws, but you should have enough range of motion that you should be able to make most plays.
Hub, I know they boot you guys out of practice and everywhere around the NFL they do it, but what's your expectation for James Daniels working into this offensive line? You figure it's kind of the same plan as we saw the last game they played, a couple of series, or do you figure he's ready for an increase?
All right. Well, just point of clarification, and again, it is what it is. It's not a complaint, but yeah, everywhere has tightened up practice, but few are as restrictive as the Bears.
Sure.
I mean, we literally get to watch them stretch, and then that's it. That we were told to leave the field on Monday. So, you know, that's how they're going about it, and that's fine. We'll learn to work that way. As far as James Daniels, you look at the tape of the Bucs game, and he played pretty well. You know, he did some things. He clearly had shown some growth from Bourbonnais from earlier in the season with the guard experiment. I still think that in terms of strength and power-wise, he's going to get overwhelmed at times because that body type hasn't changed. He's got a center's body, not a guard's body. But he clearly is learning the position. You got to remember how young this kid is and how malleable and coachable he is, and you're going to have to, you know, as fans and media, we're going to have to watch it in games. Matt Nagy was asked specifically on Monday, is it time to give him a start? He and Kush pretty much split the reps in the Bucs game. I think Kush had a few more reps, but I think Daniels had 25 or 28, and Nagy's answer was no, we want to continue to do exactly what we're doing. Both guys are handling it well. And then they bring in Brian Whitman, who was a starter in Kansas City, started 13 games last year at guard, you know, so I'm not sure exactly what they're thinking at the position. On one hand, we hear how pleased they are with Daniel's development, and then they make a move like that. They're actually, they're not any thinner at tackle, but I think this is just a case where they thought they saw a pretty good football player and didn't want to let him pass. You know, and when a veteran like that hits waivers, you know, at 3-1, there was about 20-some teams that passed in front of them. So unless they were blocking somebody behind them, they obviously still want to keep getting better at the position, even with the improvement from Daniels.
It looks like the way the Miami Dolphins play, there will be fewer drives, fewer plays run. It's a little more low scoring. They're going to limit the touches in general. It's not going to be like one of these up and down kind of NBA games because there's fewer opportunities. What does that mean about the calibration of risk on the offense? Does it mean you take more shots, or does it mean the Bears would be content to play their game, hope to get a lead early, and then sit on it with the running game?
You know, Dan, one of the things that they've done really well that we don't talk much about is they have not allowed anybody to dictate to them. They are actually number one in the NFL right now in time of possession advantage. And so, you know, while the offense has struggled to be productive in terms of points and yards, they've done a really nice job of staying on the field. And so I think whatever the Dolphins do is probably not going to have much impact on what the Bears' plan is. I think it's more about playing on the lead or playing from behind. They've done a great job, obviously, of playing on the lead, and if they can do that again, I would expect Nagy to try and build on what they did against Tampa, even though this is a better defense. I think he's going to want to find more ways for Mitch Trubisky to have success, and I think they're probably going to try and get the ball down the field more, not less.
What scares you offensively from the Dolphins? If there is, you know, obviously you're dealing with Prince Amukamara, who may not have the time to play, and Kevin Tolliver debuted well but has some issues. I mean, is anything – Kenny Stills is a great guy to root for, but I don't see a whole lot of danger.
Well, you know, Kenny Stills is a really good receiver. Mm-hmm. Albert Wilson is a guy who is playing well for them right now. They're not notable at the tight end position. And so I guess you've got to come back. Kenyon Drake is one of the fastest guys in the NFL. He has not become a complete running back, but he is a threat to go big and go long every time he touches the ball. So, you know, I suppose you worry about one or two mistakes like that, and then maybe Mitch does throw one pick because they are the only team ahead of the Bears in interception percentage. Suddenly you're playing, you know, 10 points behind, and that could dictate a little bit on what you're able to do. But as far as the offensive weapons that the Bears defense has to focus on, there's just not much there. You know, Tannehill's athletic. He'll get out of the pocket, so they're going to have to control that rush and rush outside in. They're going to want to try and force him to step up into the middle, and they're going to have Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan watching for that. But they don't have a Tariq Cohn, Allen Robinson, you know, type threat that you're going to say, well, we got to take that guy away if we want to stop the pass, or stop Jordan Howard if we want to stop the run.
Talking football with Hub Arkush. You hear him pregame and postgame and all throughout the week here on Sports Radio 670. We are going to do more with Hub on the other side of a brief timeout, get into some NFL things. CBSSports.com has the list out of the coaches on the hot seats ranked, and we'll bounce some of those numbers off him and more. The segment brought to you by the Exercise oxygen temporal scanner thermometer, flu activity remains high for the U.S., with some areas still rising. Now's the time to prepare yourself with a thermometer you can trust. The number one way to tell if it's cold or the flu is by taking your temperature. The Exergen Temporal Scanner takes an accurate temperature in seconds and is backed by more than 70 clinical studies. More football talk with Hub coming up straight ahead on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We mentioned when Hub first joined us that there was going to be an opportunity for you to have the experience of a lifetime, an opportunity to play a football game with your friends at Soldier Field the day after Thanksgiving. Well, one way that you can get to do that, to enter for that chance, is to stop into Binney's Beverage Depot in Evergreen Park. You can meet Jay Zawoski and then enter for your chance to win that opportunity for the UV Vodka Turkey Bowl, followed by a party at Flo and Santos. 670 The Score's Turkey Bowl at Soldier Field, sponsored by UV Vodka. Mix the moment. And that Binney's Beverage Depot is 3447 95th Street in Evergreen Park, Illinois. That is tomorrow from 6 to 8 p.m.
Hub, Dan's got a list of coaches that are on the hot seat. Before we get to the list itself, let me ask you a bit about the neighbors to the north. Aaron Rodgers is on record now at putting out Mike McCarthy's game plan and strategy and positions for players to succeed and not really happy with it. Is there, there's trouble in Shangri-La, yes?
Well, there's clearly a problem in the relationship. You know, when you've got the quarterback in the face of the team openly questioning his coach, it's never a good situation. Rodgers is clearly one of the two best quarterbacks in the NFL along with Brady, but you know, guys, I don't get into a whole lot of the lifestyle off the field stuff. He's proven over the last year or two to be a pretty strange guy, though, you know, and I don't know what's really going on there and how much the focus is team first and how much the focus is me first and what this is really about. But at the end of the day, McCarthy surprised a lot of people with six significant coaching changes on his coaching staff during the offseason, including offensive and defensive coordinators. The quarterback coach who Rodgers was very comfortable with, Alex Van Pelt, is gone. And so you can understand where the tension would come from. And then you got a 500 football team. I think you got to also remember, though, that Brian Gutekunst is his first year as a GM, you know, and what they've done in the draft has been interesting. They've used all their high picks on defensive backs for 4 or 5 years now. And so there's a lot more going on up there than just this friction between Rodgers and McCarthy, and you know, Packers fans expect to win the division, to be in the playoffs every year, and so certainly there is more pressure on Mike McCarthy than usual, and maybe enough to cost him his job at the end of the year. They say a decade is about enough. I think this is his 10th year. Actually, maybe it's even more than that. No, I think this is his 10th year, so it wouldn't be surprising if, in fact, there was a change, assuming the Packers don't turn it around and make a playoff run.
On this list of hot seats via CBS Sports .com. Jason Garrett is 7th. McCarthy is 6th. Jay Gruden, number 5. Dirk Cutter of the Buccaneers, number 4. The Texans' Bill O'Brien is 3rd. Hugh Jackson of the Browns is 2nd. And the number 1 hottest seat belongs to that of the Broncos' Vance Joseph. Assess the validity of that list.
Well, there's no question that Vance Joseph has got some problems because a lot of people thought he was going to be one and done after the disaster last year, and things don't appear to be getting any better in spite of the money they spent on Case Keenum to play quarterback. Now the defense is coming apart, or at least did last week in New York. So I could see Joseph being at the top of somebody else's list. But then, I mean, Hugh Jackson, I think he should be gone. I don't think he's a very good coach, but the Browns are playing their best football in 5, 6, 7 years. Why would he get fired now? It doesn't make a lot of sense. Bill O'Brien is working on a contract that has 3 years left on it, got a big extension. There's no question they're very unhappy in Houston, so I can understand why he would be on the list. You know, but Jay Gruden, a lot of people think he's done a great job in Washington. I don't think, you know, Snyder's been known to you know, use coaches and throw them under the bus. But right now, I don't think so. I think you got to wait a little bit and see. That division is completely up for grabs right now. And Washington has actually probably played the best football until Monday night of anybody in that division. So I'm not sure I see that one at all. Jason Garrett at number 7 probably should be number 2 behind Vance Joseph. Jerry Jones is going to blame somebody because he's not going to take the blame himself. This is more of a front office problem than a coaching problem in Dallas when you look at the team they're putting on the field. But I would think that Vance Joseph and Jason Garrett should be 1 and 2 right now.
It's a little surprise, at least to me, Hub, that on that list of hot seat coaches, a lot of them are combined with either recently purchased quarterbacks or quarterbacks that you could feasibly, you know, say are developmental projects, guys you could grow into. Does that surprise you at all?
Yes and no. When you go back to the beginning, Denver doesn't really have an answer at quarterback. Case Keenum, was only given a 2-year deal. And while they spent a lot of money, they're obviously still not certain what the future is there. But again, that's why when you look at Hugh Jackson, you know, if you didn't fire him during the off season after going 1-31, why would you fire him now at 2-2-1? That doesn't make any sense. And you know, clearly you got to give Baker Mayfield a chance. Dirk Cutter is on the list now. Is Jameis Winston? You know, what direction is he going in? We don't know. He hasn't really played yet. They're coming back off the bye, and they were a surprise when they got out to the 2-1 start. So. I think that you make a huge commitment to get these high first round quarterbacks. You have a short window to develop them, but with the ones that you've just drafted in the last year or two, I don't know how you can fault the coach when you know it's going to take a year or two for that quarterback to take over the team.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Coach Collins and Northwestern Basketball return to the new Welsh Ryan Arena on November 2nd. Season tickets on sale at nusports.com. Through 5 weeks, we have a record number of points scored in the NFL. We have a record number of touchdowns thrown in the NFL. We have viewership up pretty much across the board, in large part due to a very high number of games, as all these points are being scored, that are being contested within a drive, within a scoring opportunity well into the fourth quarter. And apparently it's giving us, with even with all the warts and all the controversies and everything else, this is the football we seem to want. And I know I've been enjoying it. I guess a lot of other people have too.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And you try and put all the ancillary stuff aside and figure out what really matters to people. You know, I think that the anthem concern is kind of dead at this point. It's not gone, but nobody's really talking much about it anymore. Our politics probably are driving us more to entertainment than taking away from it. And then you look at the league's problems itself. They're not the face of the domestic abuse issues anymore. They're getting good pub for trying to do something about injuries, and particularly traumatic brain injuries. I think the one thing that is interesting about the scoring, and I just don't have the time to dig this deep, but I'd like to know how many of those touchdown passes and how many of those points are coming after drives are being extended by bogus roughing the passer penalties. Because we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing games changed by it. The Packers lost a game to the Vikings because of a bad call on which the Vikings were able to go down and score a touchdown. So it would be interesting for somebody who had the time to literally go play by play through the first 100 games or whatever we're talking about. It's not 100 yet. But, you know, Dan, at the end of the day, yeah, it's pretty entertaining football. I think you've also, one of the reasons, I believe, is because of some of the newbies, if you will. I mean, the Chiefs are really exciting and fun to watch, and nobody saw that coming. You've got the Bears making noise. The style of football that New Orleans and the Rams play has always been entertaining. The matchups have been pretty good so far. We haven't been, you know, hit with a lot of these terrible dog primetime games yet. And I think if you want to talk about parity, we've never seen anything like this before, because I don't even trust the Chiefs and the Rams yet. And so I think all of that is re-engaging people. And I do think, that some of it is just that many of us are just kind of disgusted with a lot of other things going on in the world. Why not sit down and enjoy some football?
Why the distrust for the two undefeated teams in the NFL?
I think they're good football teams. I just don't know that they're going to be the two best teams at the end of the year. I think the Rams are stacked, and they should be. But you saw what happened. Aqib Talib went on injured reserve. Marcus Peters bruised that calf. They're two top corners, and they've given up almost 70 points in their last two games. And so that's something you got to keep an eye on. As far as the Chiefs, yes, that defense was very impressive on Sunday, but that Jaguars offense doesn't scare a lot of people. And how many times have we seen this from the Chiefs before? 7-0, 8-0, 9-1, then suddenly they drop 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5. I do think that Patrick Mahomes has shown the possibility that he's going to be special. He's also only started 6 games in the NFL. There's tape piling up on him. Denver had a really good game plan for him. Everybody focused so much on the incredible fourth quarter he had, which is justified, because it was amazing. But don't forget that for 3 quarters, he was not very good. And so there are going to be ways to defend him, and teams are trying to figure it out. And so I want to see the Chiefs carry it through. You know, we've seen this every year, it seems, for a decade now. And I look at the talent on that defense, and it's not one that scares you all that much.
What's your level of appreciation of Drew Brees?
You know, Dan, I got to talk with the Dans last night about this. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I have tremendous admiration for a guy who overcame, quote, being too small to be the most prolific passer in the history of the NFL. But when I get into the conversation about the 5 or 10 best of all time, for whatever reason, his name doesn't pop up for me, and I think a lot of it has to do with winning. He's very much a system quarterback. Sean Payton has done things with him that he can only do with him, and Brees and other systems might not have functioned quite as well. He's got the one Super Bowl, and that's the key measurement, but how many playoff games has he won besides that? And so I think he's a product of this modern passing era. He's a product of a special system of Sean Payton's, and I admire the hell out of him, but he just doesn't, to me, sit in the same category with Rodgers and Brady and a few of the others.
We were looking through the all-time passing list just the other day after Brees broke it, and Stafford, Rodgers, and Rivers are all right there chasing things down. If you had to bet on one of them to assume the label there, you got one other than another?
Well, Aaron Rodgers is the best of those three. Is he going to stay healthy enough and play long enough, and are they going to figure out the problems in Green Bay? I mean, that's the issue, really, is, you know, you got him and Brady and Manning run away from everybody because they played 17, 18, 19 years at that very high level. Mm-hmm. And so of that group, Rivers, they've all been pretty durable. You know, they've all stayed on the football field. So I guess I'd go with Rodgers because he's the best football player of the three.
We were also discussing earlier how more coaches are going for it on fourth down because it makes sense. Washington Post just wrote an article talking with Doug Peterson and guys like Nagy and some of the coaches who look at the math and say the math just says my team is more likely to win if we go for it. We have coaches, you know, Jason Garrett, some of the guys on that list, Bill O'Brien, guys coming under fire for conservatism and doing what is expected to be the right thing to do. How quickly is it changing? I know we have the example of that one college coach that doesn't employ a punter, that onside kicks every time, that goes for it on fourth down every time. And the argument is the math just says that should be the new conventional wisdom. Will we ever get there?
Well, I think we're going to get a lot closer to it, but you're always going to have a situation like you had with Dallas in that overtime game. I think Garrett made the wrong decision, but I do understand why he did it. His defense at times has been very good. His offense has been consistently awful. So, you know, A, that increases the odds of not getting it if you go for it. And more than that, you're going to trust your defense more than you're going to trust your offense. As you say, when you study it, the math suggests that over a period of time, you're going to be successful more often than not when you do go for it. But what you can't take out of it is kind of that human element where you got a coach on the sideline who's thinking about his job. And even though it might work out over the long haul, if he's got to win this game now, he's still going to trust that basic instinct that I'm more comfortable with my defense on the field than my offense. So I think it's going to continue to increase, but I don't think we'll ever get all the way there as long as you have teams very much like the Bears, as a matter of fact, who are very much out of whack right now. The offensive stats don't look that bad coming into this week, 24th in total offense, 7th in points scored, but that is terribly skewed by both the Bucs game against that awful defense and by the defensive points they've scored. At the end of the day, the Bears' defense is so much better than the Bears' offense that I think looking at that decision, that's going to weigh into what Nagy eventually does.
You know, Hub, one quick one before you go. I asked this, the texters have popped up with this question. I figured I'd ask it because the answer might change before you get to our callers tomorrow. What's the story, any interest in Ereck Flowers, who was just released by the Giants and a 9th overall pick out of the U? What went wrong there, and do you figure any interest if he passes through waivers?
He was one of the youngest kids ever drafted coming out of school, I think it was Miami. And you just didn't know much about the young man. You saw the physical prowess. You saw the athleticism. He has the tools to be an outstanding left tackle in the NFL. What has happened is he got to New York. He was terribly immature. He had a horrible work ethic. He didn't work to become the player that he could. And so somebody is going to take a chance on him. And the question isn't, can you teach him physically? Yeah, he can do it. He could be really good. Can you get through to him mentally? And this is where we get to some of these guys who some eventually do get it and some of them never get it. But in him, it's strictly a case of work ethic and attitude and maturity. And so with the right coach, he's still got a chance to be pretty good. Harry Hiestand is considered one of the best offensive coaches in football. I would certainly endorse the Bears taking a flyer on something like that. I mean, right now your swing tackle is Bradley Sowell. That's fine. He's not special. Now, if you're asking me what they're thinking up in Lake Forest, I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody up there about this yet.
All right, Hub, the peeps will have at you tomorrow. Thank you.
All right, guys. Take care.
That is Hub Arkish. And when we come back, your third chance today to win $1,000 in cash on the Score. I know what the text keyword is, but you don't yet.
It's not anti-disestablishmentarianism.
I didn't say it wasn't.
That's true.
So people can try it.
Still on the board.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be valid until we actually say it and activate
probably
the whole thing.
Not, yeah.
But I'm not saying it's not. I will tell you what that keyword is and give you your opportunity to win a grand next on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Of course we saved you chicken.
Yeah, we saved you chicken.
You were nice enough to buy chicken for the house.
Chicken.
We saved you the... Daddy gets the big piece of chicken.
Yeah, he gets the daddy piece.
Yeah, we know how this works. Big Daddy gets the big daddy piece. Yeah, Connor McKnight is no longer a Popeye's virgin.
This was... I got to tell you, I don't know what I was served in Fort Collins, Colorado 10 years
ago.
It wasn't this.
And this is the spicy, too. You were afraid of the spicy.
Well, it's... I had the spicy. Don't get me wrong. I love spicy food. The spicier, the better with the Thai stuff, all that kind of... If I'm not crying, I'm not actually happy while I'm eating.
This, we should do Indian sometime then.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Like a vindaloo or something really, something...
The spicy Rogan Josh.
Do that.
Yeah.
This was something incredible. I did not get this in Fort Collins. I'm convinced that instead of actually rubbing down the chicken with the spice that they do, it was the meth that they do in Fort Collins. That's what they served.
I think you caught a bad one.
This was
good. Are you sure it's spelled the same way?
No. It was 10 years ago, and again, the meth.
Right. It might have just...
It's just pop and then the letter I capitalized.
Yeah, you might have just not been this, because this is kind of how it is. They got decent quality control from franchise to franchise, and this is what you get.
It's very, very tasty. The biscuits are just a little... They've got this salty, buttery kind of afterglow to them.
Yeah, I ate too much chicken.
Yeah, you're hurting. You're kind of limping.
I don't get it.
No, I'm okay. I'm okay, but the problem is I got to go weigh myself now.
It's going to be
This is going to be like the day when we were at Smoke Daddy and they brought out the smoked corned beef and eggs, and then I went to the gym and I got on the scale and I wanted to cry.
You and I both, I took a nap for 3 hours that afternoon, and I woke up feeling terrible because of the volume of food that I put down. I regretted it. Nothing. I regretted nothing, but I felt awful.
I could send you a picture of what it looks like, of what the scale looks like when I step on it to make you feel better about yourself.
Oy-oy-oy-oying.
Tilt. Breaking glass.
It's actually the J what drop.
scale sets itself on fire.
This is a true story. When I was in grade school, we all had to weigh ourselves in class, and our teacher had a talking scale that would say your weight out loud.
In different voices, though. It would do like Jackie Mason or Gilbert Gottfried.
Somewhere between ouch and boing.
It was like seventh grade. And I had to stand on the scale in front of my whole class.
406 pounds.
That was until high school.
So, but
what sadistic teacher would make that happen in class?
That was horrible.
That's so
mean. But you were a football player.
Yes, this was not for football. I was a striper. It was over 100 for 5th and 6th grade and over 140 for 7th and 8th. And I wore the stripe proudly every year. But this was just for class. Like, oh, let's see what everybody weighs. And there were, like, a lot of people in my class bigger than me, and some of them were female. It was awful.
What jackass teacher goes to the store, gets a talking scale, and goes, I know what I got to do with this.
Get on here, tubby.
Weigh all these vulnerable 13-year-olds.
Just step on, and all of a sudden it just gives you the,
I'm fat!
What? Why would you do that?
Yeah, that's creepy.
Was it Catholic school?
Of course.
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yes. Yeah,
so you're getting hit with a ruler while
stepping on the scale. Step on the scale.
On the scale. The power of Christ compels you.
any pound over your ideal body mass index is...
hit with a baguette.
Beaten about the head and shoulders with bags of
throw
meat.
Throw globs of hollandaise at you.
Were you hit at school, Connor?
Yeah.
What grade was the first time you were struck by a million?
It was first grade. It was first grade. It was Sister Gertrude.
Yep.
And she had the the yardstick that was on one side yardstick, but on the other side was that thin insert.
Caked blood.
Razor blade.
Nails driven through. No, it was a thin insert of metal. So you could, on the chalkboard, like align your straight lines or whatever better off. And she would, as a threat, put the yardstick down on the desk and face it to you either way. You'd get the wood face or you'd get the metal face. And then that was your opportunity to shut the hell up. And if you didn't, then you didn't get to pick the face anymore.
I got hit by Sister Rosalind with a ruler for telling her, even though my name is James, people call me Jay. Okay. And she said, you were named James, we're going to call you James. Second grade.
Name Clay, go call him Clay.
Really? Had she just come back from a missionary trip? Like that's
she was 700 years old, approximately.
Sister Gertrude was ancient.
True story. I was hit with a metal and an aluminum yardstick in public school.
What? They can't do that.
My tax dollars paid for that stick.
Seventh grade.
It didn't hit him hard
seventh
enough.
Grade science class at Shepherd Junior High School.
What had you done wrong?
Nothing. Mr. Schmidt was crazy. Mr. Schmidt was a loon. Very intimidating sort of type A teacher, huge personality, and kind of a whack job. And, you know, I wasn't doing anything wrong, but he had this affectation where he'd occasionally walk around and just sort of use the stick as a pointer. And he'd point at things and he'd point at it.
Yeah,
and,
all right.
And he came and out of nowhere. He comes over and I was sitting in the first row and he comes over and he swings it above my head just like as a bit, right? Just sort of whoosh. And then he looks up at the class and goes, how close do you think I can come to Bernstein's head with this thing?
And that's a bit we've been waiting to pull on you for years. So
he literally said that. He goes, let's see how close I can swing this
everyone
to Bernstein's head.
Everyone in class
is
bidding lower. $1!
And then, not with the flat side either, with the edge
the
side,
edge, yeah.
Hit me square in the side of the head enough to draw a little blood. Knocked me off my seat and drew blood. This was the most frightened person at that moment ever seen in your life.
Has to be.
Was it Doug Buffone?
This is
the first time he tried to kill
you. Think about this. This is a public school, and I'm lying there on the floor. The whole class goes, oh my God. And like he made me like stay after it. Like I thought it was like a sign, like, are you sure you're okay?
Release form.
Are you sure you're okay? And like one of the kids is like, you know, his dad is a lawyer.
Thank you. Right? Thank you for telling me this.
Like, his uncle's a lawyer, too. And he was kind of like, what? I said, no worries. It's okay. No surprises. I know you didn't mean it. Everything's fine. But it was pretty scary.
There was
the moment after it happens and you're lying on the linoleum like, what just happened?
While I was teaching, I never did anything like that. Obviously, this was 10 years ago, so you couldn't do anything like this. But I had the urge, believe me. The kids would, with their cell phones, text in class. And you weren't allowed to have cell phones in class. This is before iPhones. This is just as the first one's coming out. And what the girls would do is they'd put their purses on top of the desk, right?
Okay.
And then giant purses. And then they would have their arms in the purse.
Oh, on their phone. Okay, sure.
While the phone is in the purse.
Sure.
Now, I wasn't angry that they were flouting the rules of the school. I was angry that they could possibly think that I was that stupid so as to not see this ridiculous body language and the glow of the phone on their face
right.
while they're texting.
Right. So what'd you do?
So I walk up to
them. I hit them all with yardsticks.
While they're texting, I gathered a number of yardsticks. Okay. I walked up to them and I just slowly removed the purse from the desk.
Right.
And all that's left is the hands and the phone. And I'm like, what? How do you think I'm that dumb? Like, I'm looking at all of you. My back's not even turned
right.
to you. So I took the phone, because you can't have one in class. So I take the phone, and I was very, very angry. So I kind of made a show, because I was, you know, you gotta do so the first day, otherwise you're going to...
Right.
So I opened the drawer, and I kind of chucked the phone into the drawer
That's
and
then
shut
happens.
The door.
Yep.
And I heard a very audible breaking of something. So I thought I had shattered this kid's phone. And everybody else in class had also heard it.
Perfect.
So everyone's looking around like, oh my God, what happened? And I managed to hold it together and act all, you know, kind of badass with a shattered phone in my desk.
Right.
I managed to not think about it. But the entire rest of class, I'm going, I just broke this kid's phone and I'm going to be fired on my third day. That's awesome. This is great.
What broke?
Managed nothing. I had like a little pencil holder thing, like a ceramic thing, and that shattered.
Oh, okay. Perfect. You couldn't have planned it any better. It is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. This hour's keyword is love. Text love to 72881. And by the end of the hour, again, the keyword is love to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. True love. He said true love. No.
No.
He said to blame.
It's clearly to bluff. It's probably at a game of cards.
Liar! When we come back, we're going to talk to the man who is the chicken god.
The chicken father.
The benefactor of all things chicken, Dan McNeil. And his
happy founder of the feast.
And his recently shorn sidekick, Danny Parkins. They're coming up next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.